Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, the tale of two provinces.
We can't afford to shut down again or experience a sudden surge in cases, like we're seeing in other provinces across the country.
Over 2 million Albertans have gotten their proof of vaccination cards since Sunday.
Ontario's mandatory vaccine passport system launches today as Alberta debates their non-mandatory version. Which is more effective? Why are there no details as to how long either of these will actually last? And is it time for one national system for other issues like planes, trains, and buses? We'll check into both provinces, and then we'll be joined by Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie to find out how the rollout's actually going in her city. And Erin O'Toole's next big fight, just 2 days after the federal election and his defeat, Erin O'Toole is already facing a grassroots leadership challenge. Can the leader hold on to power? We will speak to the Conservative National Council member who's leading the charge, calling for a review. Plus, back to work. The pandemic election is over, but when will MPs actually get back to work? How long until the government issues a national vaccine passport, as they promised? Newly re-elected MPs will dig into that. All that and lots more on Power Play. Let's not wait, and let's get to the players. It's a tale of two certificates. It was the best of vaccine passports, and it was the worst of vaccine passports, at least in some people's eyes. The COVID story of Ontario and Alberta is almost Dickensian. Ontario's mandatory vaccine certificate system is now officially in effect. Kind of reflects Quebec and BC. There's no opting out for dine-in restaurants or movie cinemas or gyms or clubs. But earlier this week, Alberta rolled out their non-mandatory vaccine certificate. It's even got a different name. It's called a restriction exemption program, which allows retail stores or libraries actually to opt out. And if they do, they have to face capacity limits. But facing a disastrous fourth wave, the Alberta system is so confusing that cities like Calgary are actually thinking of passing their own mandatory system, just like Ontario or Quebec or BC. And the Premier, Jason Kenney, who faced a big caucus meeting today, is still facing calls for his resignation over the handling of the fourth wave. So which system is more effective and how long will they last? Why are there no details as to how the next step will be decided? Let's begin our coverage with the Bureau Chief first in Ontario at Queen's Park. CTV's Colin DeMello joins us, and then we'll go to Alberta. Colin, Premier Ford said he, quote, reluctantly brought in the vaccine certificate today. Tell us a bit of the details. Where does it apply, and who's going to get this thing?
Well, it applies at all non-essential settings. So if you want to go to the movies, if you want to go to a concert, if you want to go to the gym or dine indoors, you will have to have this vaccine certificate. There are a number of exemptions. So the servers or the person who trains you at the gym, they don't have to be fully vaccinated in order to work there. It also doesn't apply to the outdoor portions of a restaurant or a place of worship, as an example. It also doesn't apply inside of a mall at a retail operation. But every single Ontarian 12-plus who is eligible for the vaccine, they can now print out their vaccine receipt and carry it along with them to show proof that they've been fully vaccinated. As for how long, Evan, we don't know how long it's going to last. The Premier is incredibly uncomfortable with vaccine certificates. He says he understands that civil liberties, there are concerns here. He says he doesn't want it to last any longer than it needs to, but the Premier won't say what the parameters are to actually lift these requirements.
Yeah, I think this is really important. Let's just dig in. He said that today at his press conference, the Premier said this will only last as long as the pandemic lasts, and the second we don't need it, we'll throw it away. I guess the question is, what's the metric there? Is it number of cases? Is it the vaccine? Is it the COVID doesn't have to last in Ontario? Or is it around the world or around the country? How do people know when this thing will sunset?
Well, the government will not say. I mean, at least the Premier is offering those who are hesitant about the policy the idea that there is going to be a sunset clause. This is not our, you know, forever normal. One of the members of the Ontario Science Advisory Table, who is, you know, quite an influential voice here in Ontario, Dr. Peter Uni, is suggesting that it could last until at least next spring. But the Premier says it's the Chief Medical Officer of Health who will ultimately design the parameters to pull this back. But ultimately, right now, we're kind of in this limbo phase. The premier's already looking towards the end of it. A lot of people are looking for how it's being implemented right here and right now. Remember, we have a paper copy, not a QR code. And the Toronto Board of Trade, they said today, listen, the QR code should have been ready on day one because that is what makes it most efficient and most clear for businesses to implement. But we don't know what it'll take to lift these requirements and how long they're going to be in place, other than some anecdotal notes from doctors who are speaking out about it today.
And many of our viewers will know no QR code available for people in Ontario. That's exactly what the Quebec system was, a QR code, and proved incredibly effective. We're now joined. Stay with us, Colin, because I want to bring in CTV's Alberta Bureau Chief, Bill Forche. Bill, great to have you on the program. So we're talking about the tale of two vaccine certificates. So you got the non-mandatory vaccine. I don't even want to call it a vaccine certificate because it's the exemption program there. So you got a new title there. How's that going over in Alberta?
Yeah, it's a long title. The Restrictions Exemption Program, the not a passport, vaccine passport. And actually, Doug Schweitzer, the Justice Minister, called it a vaccine passport just the other day in a tweet. And even if you go on the website now, it says, frequently asked questions about the vaccine passport. So, you know, Jason Kenney, the Premier, has been adamant this is not a vaccine passport, but it looks like a vaccine passport and it sure walks like a vaccine passport. Again, though, no QR code yet. We're still waiting on that as well.
Yeah, but it's different, right? Because you have the opt out. So just two things. I spoke to Calgary Mayor Nad Nenshi yesterday, and he said, we're so furious about this weird Swiss cheese thing that we might recall our council and start our own vaccine passport the way Colin's describing the one in Ontario or Quebec or BC. So are some cities just saying, you know what, we need something more consistent and robust?
Cities, businesses, people, a lot of people are saying that. I mean, This came out and you can download it now, and it's an editable PDF. So a lot of people went on Twitter and made fun of this thing and put in, you know, the name McLovin instead of their own, or change the names of the vaccines. They could edit it and, you know, you could print this thing off and bring it in and, you know, this is my proof that I've been vaccinated. So, you know, a joke to a lot of people that just how easy it was and how the system didn't really make a lot of sense, especially without a QR code. And as you say, you know, this is an opt-in thing. So a lot of businesses, restaurants and such are pretty angry that they have to make this tough decision. They have to say, yes, right, we're going to opt into this program, make you show vaccination. And now all the anger is funneled back towards the serving staff, the host, the people at the door or whatever, instead of it going to the premier and to the government.
Bill, last thing, and then I will have a quick question to Colin, but real quick, I know Jason Kenney he had a caucus meeting today. A lot of people think he was going to be forced to resign. Obviously, he wasn't. What happened behind closed doors to Jason Kenney and his own party today?
So, you know, as you know, we're not privy to exactly what happened. There's caucus confidentiality that we don't get to know exactly what happened. They came out just before 2 p.m. Most of them, came out smiling, wouldn't say anything, as we kind of assumed might happen. Tani Yao, Northern Alberta MLA, did briefly speak and just said it was more civil than he expected. It was professional conversation. And he said, I'm glad we all understand each other now. Whatever that means, we don't know. Of course, we know there is a divide within caucus and within the party. I mean, the party's own vice president of policy wrote an op-ed piece calling on Jason Kenney to resign as premier. So, you know, we know that there are some elements of this United Conservative Party that want the premier out, but clearly he still has some support because, you know, they could have demanded his resignation. He could say no. They could push for an early leadership review. Maybe that happened. We don't know. But, you know, as far as we're hearing at this point, you know, he's not resigning.
No, he survives. And Colin, let me jump over to you. Just a weird thing today. I want to ask you about an attack ad put out by the Ontario NDP, but they confused the Progressive Conservative MPP, Sharif Sabawe, for another MP, another diverse MPP, rather. Can you explain what happened and the reaction to it?
Yeah, I mean, the NDP says they were trying to highlight all of the progressive conservative MPPs in Ontario who had voted against paid sick days in this province. So they put out an ad saying, you know, MPP Khalid Rashid had voted against this, but instead they used the image of another person of color, an MPP under Premier Doug Ford's government, Sharif Sabawi. So the government today issued a statement. Right as Andrea Horvath was holding a news conference, we all got a statement from the Premier's office in our inbox saying, you know, this was racially insensitive, and the NDP should apologize to not only the two members involved, but also the public in Ontario. The NDP did apologize for the confusion, but they also brought up an interesting point. They said this was posted back in April, and it was taken down almost immediately after they realized that they made a mistake. Why now in September are they bringing this up? So they think that there's a little bit of political motivation here, but it seems like the NDP made an error. They apologized for the error. Now we just have to see whether the Premier's office or the two members involved are going to accept that apology.
All right, Colin and Bill, lots going on in those provinces as we end the federal election campaign and we get back to the provincial level politics. Thanks to both of you. As always, great to have you on the program. Let me go back to Ontario's vaccine system. It's brand new. It's still in progress. It's temporary. Lots of questions. But how's it actually going in the rollout? Let's find out as the Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie joins us, fresh off the federal election in the city. Mayor, always a pleasure. How's the rollout of the new vaccine passport going? What are you hearing?
Well, you know, it took a little time to download it. I downloaded my copy today. It took me about 12 minutes, but I did it. And I put it on my phone right on my homepage so that when I go to the gym in the morning, I just have to show them my homepage. I think it's brilliant. I can't wait till the QR code comes out on October 22nd. I think this is the right direction to go. And you know that I was an early advocate for this.
12 minutes to download? What are you, like, on AOL? What is that?
No, I think, no, it was crashing the system because so many people downloaded it today because it was needed today. No, it was just the volume on the website, and it was COVID-19.ontario.ca. So that was the website. That's what I went to, and it just took a long time. There were 400,000 people ahead of me, apparently.
Okay. I was wondering if you were on dial-up or something. What are you hearing from the business community about this, Mayor?
Right. So let's start with the fact that the Chambers of Commerce and the Boards of Trade all wanted this. The businesses have been checking your temperature to go into those non-essential services. And we have heard nothing other than one person who called in and said, well, now that we have the vaccine passport, can we increase capacity? So we'll have to get there. We'll advocate that to the Premier next. But one thing at a time, I there haven't been any issues that I'm aware of. I checked with bylaw enforcement, all clear, and they know that should they have a problem, they just need to call 311. And I don't anticipate a lot of problems. We've now approached 80% vaccinated in Ontario and Peel region. We have an aspirational goal of 90% double dosed, and we're getting there with our vax van going right into the community. So that leaves 10% of people who either have a medical exemption or refuse to be vaccinated. So should there be any pushback, it's in a small group of people that may happen in isolated cases, and I think everyone will move on. We've all asked for this. It's the right way to go. It makes it safer for everyone. It's in all the non-essential businesses, as we know. I had to show it to go into the film festival last week, to go into the gym every second morning when I go, right? So to have indoor dining, you'll need to show at cinemas, right? Well, you know, concerts and, of course, sporting events, too.
Just real quick, there are real questions about what metrics can citizens look at to find out when this thing sunsets? Like, at some point, it's got to end. I know the Premier said, we want it to end, but we don't know what's the metric so citizens can say, okay, I know now, and that might be an incentive. If everyone, you know, 95% of people have it, you know, coronavirus is done, we can get rid of this damn thing.
I don't want to mislead people to think that this is only be in place for 3 to 6 months. I think it'll be a longer term than that. And today with my staff, we were discussing this very issue, and we decided that when the pandemic became endemic, it would end in sunset. So I think that's a good matrix to think about. So when COVID is in the system, but isn't in a pandemic format.
Okay, maybe that's the metric, from pandemic to endemic. I have, by the way, no idea what that at what point that something becomes an endemic, to be candid. But okay, I'm going to look that
up. Well, SARS is endemic. Let's talk about that. It's still in the system, right?
Okay, but is there a line? Like, no, honestly, like, what is the line? Like, I don't know. When does a pandemic turn into an endemic? Like, what's the number? I'm a kind of numbers person.
I hear you. I don't know what that matrix will be. I don't think anyone does at this point will allow the provincial government to define that. However, you know, whether it's zero cases across the province or close to that, you know, in especially in the urban areas, because I think the rural and suburban areas, the rural areas will get to that number before we will in the more densely populated communities and municipalities. But, you know, they'll have to define that. We'll let the science advisory table define that. But I like that. Positioning that when it's not in a pandemic state any longer, it's now endemic. It is in the system, but affecting far fewer people.
All right, Mayor Crombie, always a pleasure. Thanks for having us joining us on the show.
Always join you. Thank you. You're my
on,
pleasure.
You're on so much. I say having us on the show. I feel like we're on your show. It's great to have you on the program. That's Bonnie Crombie in the city of Mississauga. Coming up, now that the Change Nothing election is over, when will MPs actually get back to Parliament and get some work done? And how fast will a national vaccine passport, things you might need for buses, trains, planes, the way the Prime Minister has talked about, when are you going to get that? MPs are next to dig into that more. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. If you look behind me, you can't even see Parliament Hill. You can't even see the Peace Tower. The view's not clear. But voters did send MPs a clear message. No fog here. Get back to work. Then we'll talk about which party gets some political reward, some political candy. But when will MPs actually return to Parliament? I don't know if they can find it in this fog. And with the provinces pressing ahead with vaccine passports, we just saw Ontario do that. The U.S. also having rules about crossing their border. When will there be a national passport that Mr. Trudeau has promised for things like borders, planes, trains, and buses? And what about the national passport for the travel? We'll find out about that. Joining me are three people who held on to their seats. They won yesterday. Liberal Adam Vancouver did. He was elected in Milton. Dan Albus, the Conservative MP-elect for Central Okanagan, and Peter Julian, the NDP-elect for New Westminster Burnaby. First of all, congrats, gentlemen. Anybody that throws their hat in the ring, it's a hard process, and I'm sure you and your families give a lot, so I really, really congratulate all of you. It's a hard-fought victory. Mr. Vancouver, let me just start with you. Any idea when Mr. Trudeau will finally will recall Parliament so MPs can get back to work to passing the legislation that was so much talked about in the election?
Well, as soon as possible, Evan, and thank you and congratulations to my two friends and colleagues on the call today as well. I think I speak for all three of us and most MPs across the country when I say the work has been ongoing. It's challenging to do a campaign and also be, an incumbent MP at the same time because there is still a lot to do. But I was working today, and I'm sure my two colleagues were as well. I also know that the Prime Minister was working, and he was talking with the premiers as well as President Biden. And I would like to get back to that work of legislation, as you mentioned, as quickly as possible. And I think that's why, September 20th was a good day because we were meant to get back this week. So very, very shortly, we will be hopefully back in Ottawa. I'd like to say in person. I suppose that depends on the workplace conditions regarding vaccines and stuff like that. But the answer for me is as soon as possible.
Okay. So you want to get to work. I'm not suggesting MPs aren't working, but I'm talking about the work of actually getting together to pass legislation. One of those things, I'll just press you, Mr. Vancouver. So you're saying that the Prime Minister will recall Parliament, get going maybe in September?
I can't answer that. I'm not the Prime Minister. We only have a couple of days left in September. So, the decision, I suppose, is theirs. But I know there's a lot to do right now. We've all got inboxes that were overflowing and a chance to reorganize locally and make sure that our priorities are set. I know what mine are going back to Ottawa, so I'm looking forward to it as soon as possible.
Mr. Albus, when would you like to see MPs, if they can, either virtually or physically, back in their seats so legislation can begin to try to make some of these promises we heard on the election into law?
Well, first of all, let me echo Adam's comments and congratulate all members of Parliament and those that put their name forward for public office. I'm sure many of them, their friends and family, are happy to see them again. And the work waits for us right now. In fact, September 20th would have been the day that we would have returned back to the House of Commons in session had there not been an unnecessary pandemic election over $610 million. So we could have been talking about all the issues that were discussed in the election campaign. Unfortunately, the Prime Minister decided to call an election. And that's why we have stopped, essentially, and I don't believe that the Prime Minister will be able to assemble a new cabinet before October. So, again, it's up to the Prime Minister, as Adam said, but Canadians who are hoping for swift action on dealing with the pandemic, they're going to have to wait, unfortunately.
Just, Mr. Albus, let me just press you. Your party, you didn't win. Your party didn't support mandatory vaccinations for sort of the federal service, even for your own candidates. But almost 70% of the country voted for parties that did. And, you know, Justin Trudeau wants mandatory vaccines to get on a plane, train, or bus. The CPC position wasn't that. But most Canadians obviously didn't support that. Will your party now support that position and say, okay, we'll pass that and get that going?
So, first of all, it's important to say I'm vaccinated. My leader, Aaron O'Toole, is vaccinated. We've encouraged everyone to get vaccinated, and we will continue to do that because that's how we return to normal. Look, you know, Evan, that we've put millions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, into rapid tests. And if any particular industry needed a lift over the past year and a half, it is the air industry. We also see where the rapid tests could have been deployed to help build the certainty into that. And unfortunately, Mr. Trudeau continues to talk about making clients safer.
I don't want to redo the campaign.
We still have international travel.
I just don't want to redo the campaign.
I just want to find out.
Okay, so you got Ontario passing mandatory vaccines. You've got Quebec, BC, and we've just had an election where we had that debate, and literally almost 70% of the country doesn't agree with that position. So you're saying the Conservatives will not change their position on mandatory vaccines for buses, planes, and trains?
We would like to see tools that we already have, like rapid tests, and it's up to the government to actually say why it believes that going through this process is better. We don't know if it's legislation or if they can do it by regulatory means. If they could do it by regulation, really they should have been doing that 12 months ago when people needed that. So we are supportive of using rapid tests that already have been purchased by the government of Canada and making air travel safer and allowing for a safe way for people to get back to work and to start getting back to normalcy. Unfortunately, the government always puts itself first, and I don't believe we should politicize this issue. I think we need to start using those tools we have right now.
Okay, Mr. Julian, what's your view on, A, when MPs should get back and when we got to get these? I mean, the provinces are rushing ahead on this because we're in the middle of a fourth wave. When does the federal government have to get some of this stuff in place?
Well, first off, I'd like to congratulate my colleagues as well and all new and returning members of Parliament and thank everybody across the country who put their names forward. It's fundamentally important in democracy. And that's being said, the selection was called for one reason only, Mr. Trudeau wanting to get a majority. He did not get it. What we've been saying all along is that Parliament should be working. We saw the Liberal government slash the benefits on the emergency response. They're saying that they're going to bring an end to the wage subsidy, the rent subsidy to keep small businesses going, keep people in place. And so we need to immediately get back to work to address those issues. We've got an affordability crisis, a housing crisis across the country, growing homelessness, growing lineups at food banks, and we have the climate crisis. And so the government has no excuse. They shouldn't have called the election. Now that they called it and put us all through this, we need to get back to work immediately. There are too many crises that are having an impact on Canadians' lives. And so no time should be wasted.
What's the priority here? I mean, there's a lot of priorities and you know, politics is about choices. How fast does the federal government, in your view, need to come up with a clarity on some kind of mandatory vaccine certificate?
I think that's very important. I also think that the slashing of the emergency response benefit is something that ought not to have happened. And I hear from my constituents, and we hear from people across the country, that they are really struggling right now. So the government needs to act and reverse some of the damage they did just at the beginning of the summer.
Okay, just last question, Mr. Vancouver, and this is a slightly different topic, but a former Liberal named Kevin Vaughan was actually elected in Spadina, Fort York. He was a Liberal. Now, after allegations against him that he denies sexual harassment, he will sit as an independent in the House of Commons. It was a sexual assault charge back in 2019 that was later dropped by the Crown, and he denies it, and he released a statement today saying, "I appreciate that not everyone's happy with my election, and I very much understand why it's different in my case. For those who feel this way, I understand the source of doubts. I'll work hard to earn your trust." So I just have to ask you, will your party promise that Mr. Vaughan will not ever be allowed back into the caucus, or is that option still open to him, sir?
Kevin Vaughan will not be sitting as a Liberal MP, and it's my personal belief, and I haven't spoken with everybody in my party, and certainly there may be different opinions, which is fine. I think he should resign, and I think that eventually there should be a by-election in that important riding. But I don't think that that he should continue, no. And he will not be sitting as Liberal MP.
I got to leave it there. I appreciate that. A short and straight answer. There we go. This is great. Mr. Vancouverden, Mr. Albus, and Mr. Julian, again, I really do congratulate the three of you. I know you got colleagues that didn't make it, and it is important that our democracy functions. For whatever people think about the cynicism of it, I do see how hard it is, and I congratulate the three of you for winning and representing your ridings. Thank you, sirs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you guys.
Coming up, rumblings of revolt. Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole triggers a campaign review, but what about a leadership review? Our next guest has already pressed forward to say there needs to be one. He's influential. Let's find out what he says next. Stay with us.
I'm the leader of the party that founded this great country, and I'm very proud of that. I want to earn that trust of Canadians, and that's why we're going to work tirelessly to examine what went right, what went wrong, to make sure that we form a government that has all Canadians part of a Conservative government, and we're going to need that because we could be back in an election in another 18 months.
That is Aaron O'Toole. He's trying to make his pitch to survive, but listen to these words already. Betrayed. Broken trust, failed. That's right. The revolt has started already after failing to win the election. How big is the movement to oust that man, Aaron O'Toole? After all, the O'Toole strategy was this: rebrand the Harper Conservatives in the image of a progressive conservative, Brian Mulroney, and hope to win Ontario and Quebec seats. It didn't work. Should he be ousted as the leader? And what is this new petition to do just that? The press gallery is going to dig into that. And they are joining us now. Tonda McCharles is a senior reporter with the Toronto Star's Ottawa Bureau. Carl Dockstader is the co-host of One Dish, One Mic and the executive director of the National Niagara Regional Native Centre. And the man behind the petition is Conservative National Council member Bert Chen. He launched a change.org petition that I'm reading, calling for Aaron O'Toole to be recalled as party leader. He says, and I'm reading, "Aaron O'Toole has betrayed the principles that the Conservative Party was founded on, has broken the trust of the members, and his campaign in 2021 failed in electing Conservatives." So welcome to everyone. And first of all, Ms. Chen, thank you for joining us. Why did you decide that instead of internally to make this an external call for a revolt?
Well, thanks for having me on, Evan. So first of all, I'm a volunteer member of the Executive Council of the Conservative Party, and I represent the membership of the Conservative Party. And the feedback that I've been getting from members now for a long time, but now further exacerbated after the election results on Monday, is that the membership feels angry, the membership feels betrayed, and the membership has lost confidence in Aaron O'Toole as leader of our party. First of all, I put forward this petition because in our party's constitution, one of the mechanisms to have a leadership review would be to have a referendum amongst the membership. And that referendum can only be issued by National Council, of which I am a member.
Okay, but I'm looking, I've asked countless conservatives, okay? I get kind of a split. Some says he's got real problems in there, but some say he's got real support. I'll read you one. Based on caucus feedback to date and grassroots, Aaron is in a strong position. He outperformed expectations. You've only got 1,000 signatures on this. What makes you think there is actually any appetite to replace Aaron O'Toole?
Well, I've gotten almost 1,300 signatures in less than 24 hours. So that just speaks to the speed of which this is happening. Look, Aaron O'Toole has broken integrity and is not being accountable to the membership that I represent. Conservatives have a high
standard. I'm just trying to ask you, why has he broken integrity? He ran, he won, he put out a party platform, and he didn't win. I'm not saying there shouldn't be a review, but why this mechanism? Why try to oust him already?
Part of integrity is keeping the promises that you make. And during the leadership campaign more than a year ago, Mr. O'Toole ran as a true blue conservative that the members elected him for. When the campaign started, we saw that that was clearly being reversed. We clearly saw that he had backtracked and flip-flopped on issues such as the carbon tax. And that speaks to integrity. Conservatives just want a leader who has integrity and, two, is held accountable. By not having a leadership review, the next opportunity, which is more than 2 years away at our next national convention, Mr. O'Toole is not being accountable to the members unless we are able to put forward a referendum.
Okay, and just, Tanya, I'm going to bring you in and just explain to our viewers that in the constitution of the Conservative Party, after an election loss, there is a mandatory leadership review, but it happens at the next party convention, mm-hmm. which is close to 2 years away, so he's got a long runway. What do you make of what Mr. Chen's saying, the fact that there's 1,300 signatures, and what you're hearing, Tanya, about Mr. O'Toole's hold on the party after raising hopes of a win and then those being very much dashed?
Mm-hmm. Look, I think Mr. Chen is speaking for quite a number of party members, but I think what we've already seen is Mr. O'Toole trying to protect his flank by saying even before a convention 2 years from now, he's willing to put his membership on the line at a caucus vote. And so he wants caucus to have the initial say, and then in his view, he thinks he can survive that, even though a majority of caucus members didn't support him initially for the leadership. But look, he's going to make a whole bunch of arguments, his prime one being holding the threat or risk to the party of another election within 18 months to 2 years, and that they don't have time to go through the same exercise that they've gone through, frankly, twice now since 2015, which is to, you know, throw the leadership up in the air again, run a whole new campaign, and then put that leader in position to run an election. So he's got, you know, mitigating against the anger that many party members and candidates feel is that threat of election. And also the fact that, look, there was a sense when they early on started running their campaign and had a platform and looked like they were on message and everything that conservatives were willing to give him, conservative voters were willing to give him a buy and supported him, and a lot of support coalesced behind him. I think he's really facing a very, very difficult few weeks and months. I'm not sure whether he can survive it, and the Chen petition, you know, is evidence of that.
I would just say this, conservatives looking will say in Ontario, they tossed out, remember, Pat Brown. In that, progressive conservatives, they installed Doug Ford. Then they won a majority, and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He was a leader just for a few months, so they didn't need him. Yep. You know, they made a quick change and they won. So I guess in the Mr. Chen column, that works, Carl. But Mr. Chen makes a point. Whether it's the broken promises, the big promise for Aaron O'Toole was, I'm going to rebrand this party, and I know some of you may not like it, but we're going to win in Quebec and win in Ontario. And the truth is, it flamed out. The question is, does he get a second shot?
Yeah, and I don't know, that was the promise, right? By moving closer to the center, by moving away from like defunding the CBC and conscience doctors' rights and flipping positions on the liberal firearm ban repeal. The promise was that would be more votes in the 416 and the 905. That just didn't translate. And I think you're savvy to bring up Patrick Brown, because it was a last minute. It's like pulling your quarterback, you know, the week before the game and putting someone else in, or firing your coach halfway through the hockey season. Sometimes it works.
Yeah, Mr. Chen, I know Jenny Byrne, the former campaign director for Stephen Harper, she was saying that Mr. O'Toole's leadership is going to be questioned. Do you have any sitting MPs who have signed your petition or spoken to you to support you?
No, I haven't spoken to members of caucus currently, other than to congratulate those who are reelected and to pass messages to those who are unsuccessful. But let me just say one thing. As a result of Monday night, I am one of the only Chinese Canadian elected members of our party federally. And I feel that Mr. O'Toole lost the trust of a key demographic in this country, and why it contributed to a loss in the GTA and Metro Vancouver. Because the community that I'm a member of feels uncomfortable with Mr. O'Toole's messaging, and feels that we are not able to trust the conservatives.
Which is such a turnaround, right? Like, Evan, you know, you and I remember when the Conservative Party under Stephen Harper assiduously courted the Chinese Canadian vote in the diaspora community in this country, right? And made inroads, because they deemed that Chinese Canadian communities held fundamentally small C conservative family values that they shared with the party. So, you know, that is a huge political issue for Mr. O'Toole. But I think the bigger issue is, actually, has he been able to coalesce a broader coalition of all kinds of voters behind him? And that's the test he faces in the coming weeks.
To be fair, in 2015, under Stephen Harper, a lot of those communities had already bolted to the Liberals. Try to be factual. Mr. Chen, just before I let you go, real quick, what number do you need to get on your petition here to trigger a referendum? Is there a threshold?
So we're in uncharted waters for the Conservative Party in terms of, we never had a poll, petition, or referendum put forward to National Council or to the membership. But as a member of National Council, I hope to set the parameters to put forward such a referendum in the long run.
Okay, I would just say the Conservative Party said there is no formal mechanism in this kind of stuff. You can do it, but it doesn't have any formal impact outside of the politics of it. Okay, Ms. Chen, thank you so much for joining us. I know Carl and Tonda are going to stick around as we continue to delve into things like the Ontario Vaccine Passport System, which kicks off today. Did it go far enough? And will it boost vaccine rates and curb the fourth wave? And what about the federal government? Do they need to get going on some kind of national standard on all this stuff? Former Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne joins the press gallery next. Stay with us. So as the dust begins to settle on the federal election, political junkies will be able to go back to their normal lives. But in Ontario and New Brunswick, there'll be a new normal. These two provinces rolled out their proof of vaccination systems. Ontarians and New Brunswickers will have to show proof of vaccination, not a QR code yet in Ontario, but paper, then a QR code in October, to enter non-essential businesses like restaurants, bars, and gyms. Quebec's got one. BC's got one. I guess there's a version now in Alberta that's called the exemption program, so it's not mandatory, it's opt out. But what about the federal government? In the campaign, Justin Trudeau said he needs it to be mandatory to take a plane, train, or bus and have a vaccination. I took a plane back from Toronto to Ottawa this morning. Where was the system? The provinces are going way ahead. Will the federal government catch up? The press gallery is here to weigh in on that. Toronto Star's Tanya McCharles is back. The co-host of One Dish One, Mike Carl Dockstader, is back. And our special guest is the former Premier of Ontario, MPP Kathleen Wynn. Great to have everyone back. Kathleen Wynn, good to see you. What's your take on how the federal government needs to ally now that, you know, the province of Ontario is rolling out their vaccine certificate? Quebec's got one. BC's got one. There was a big topic in the federal election. How fast does the federal government need to step up and get in the game here, Kathleen Wynn?
Well, I think right away. I think that, you know, Evan, you've sort of made an equivalent comment about all the different provinces. The fact is, you know, in Ontario, the premier and the government were dragged to this. I think Justin Trudeau has been very clear. And I think that now that the election's over, I fully expect that he will be stepping up right away to work with the provinces and make sure that there's a seamlessness about the expectation across the country.
Yeah, but Tonda, like, step up right away. Does Parliament have to be called? I mean, they could be a month before that happens. We're in the middle of the fourth wave. People want to get, time matters here. We've already been interrupted with the 36-day campaign. Tonda, what do you see the federal government's obligations here?
Let's just talk apples and apples here. What's in under consideration is by the provinces, apps and QR codes and proof of vaccination for use in areas where the provinces have jurisdiction, which is the businesses and streets of our country, you know, restaurants, theaters, gyms, that sort of thing. And then for domestic use, it's all on the provinces. For federal use, for international travel, it's on the feds to come up with a standardized app. The question becomes, should we just have one standardized app that works as your international travel passport and works as your domestic vaxport to get into some place? I mean, I just spent, you know, some days traveling around the country and having to do different things to get into different places in different provinces. In one place, you know, getting into a university, it was like a two-step monster of an affair to get in and find a QR code and upload and download lot numbers of my vaccinations and whatnot. It was a mess. So what the feds need to do first and foremost right away is get money out the door to help the provinces who want to go this route, get their apps and their form of proof of vaccination done. That Parliament may have to come back for that spending of that money, but I'm sure that there's some way they can get money out the door via the health department to make that happen sooner than later. That's what they need to do right away. But I think a lot of Canadians, once they do get back to daily living and travel and whatnot, will want to see just one easy thing. And for the life of me, I don't know why that hasn't already been developed. The ICAO standards have been out there. The technical specifications have been out there since June. All of this could have been done.
Yeah, Carl, I'm with Tonya. I thought this was going to be done. Okay, then we had the election, but it just seems as the provinces are doing their own thing and there's a patchwork. The federal government just has not stepped up to give people, even the United States is now requiring proof and people are just very confused. What's your sense of this?
Yeah, I really don't understand why we're so behind on this. Like I understand we just took a 36-day break, but it does seem like the federal government, the provincial governments could have been working behind the scenes to streamline approaches. I know when Ontario started to talk about rolling out vaccine passports, like there were bureaucrats, not politicians, that were working behind the scenes to make these things happen. So I don't understand why there isn't a plan that's just like press send and we're gonna spend a couple weeks working out these details and a couple months rolling it out afterwards.
Kathleen, Evan, can I just jump in on
ahead.
That? Yeah,
because I mean, how would that work? You've been in these rooms.
So one of the reasons, Carl, is that there wasn't leadership in Ontario. I can speak for Ontario. There wasn't a premier and a leadership that said, this is what we want to do. Because the planning, you're absolutely right, the planning could have been done ages ago, but the bureaucrats are only going to take their instructions in terms of timing. Yes, they'd be working behind the scenes, and they would have a lot of the preparation done, but they would not have been given the sort of go ahead to move quickly and be ready because the ideology got in the way. The Premier of Ontario didn't want to do this, doesn't want to do it, and isn't clear about how long it's going to last. So I think, yes, the federal government needs to step up, and yes, there needs to be money that goes out the door, but there was not an agreement across the country among the provinces about doing this.
Yeah, but they could lead on it. Just let me just jump in, Kathleen, just one quick question. You mentioned they don't know, there's a question about sunset clauses and all this stuff, and how long these are going to last. What's your view about the metric for when people can say, I don't need this anymore? Like, what would the sunset clause look like so everyone that's transparent and comprehensible to the average citizen?
I don't know whether anybody can talk about that. I mean, I know there are people saying, you know, maybe we'll just need this forever. There's no sunset clause on those vaccination forms for kids going to school, Evan. You know, kids have had to show their vaccination cards forever. So I don't know what the sunset clause is, and I don't think we know yet what the timing is. And quite frankly, I think we should be putting in place a system that is easy enough and straightforward enough that it can be in place for the long term.
I know, Carl, you wanted to jump in and then Tanya on that last point. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, I'm here in a border community, and again, I've gone now years without seeing my father because I'm just waiting for a little bit of federal leadership as well. Like, it's easy to blame the provincial government for not having their bureaucrats working on it, but the same argument applies on the federal level. I also think that everybody should be honest. We're looking at this for our local medical officer said maybe a year, maybe more. We're in this for the long haul, and if we make it easy, though, it won't be that much of an inconvenience or a problem.
Tonda, last word real quick.
When someone can tell me when the coronavirus is going to disappear from the earth, I'll be ready to sunset it.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
You're right. No one can. Kathleen Nguyen, we got to get some herd immunity. Tonda, Carl, and Kathleen Nguyen, great to have you, the three of you, on the program. Thanks for your time. And that is your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks for watching. Take care. Get your vaccines and hug your loved ones. We will be back here in 23 short hours. Thanks for watching. Take good care.